All right.
We do this at Christmas.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for coming. I'm John Lynn. I'm the chairman, currently the chairman for the Animal Services Advisory Committee. Our meeting's here today, October 10th, 2019 at 5:30. I'd like to start going to my left and ask everyone to introduce themselves. We do have one of our committee members on FaceTime with us, Catherine Overstreet, and she's here with us. And I'd like to start with Carol at the end. Everybody just introduce themselves, please.
Hello, I'm Carol Roop.
I'm Patty McDuff.
Donna Young.
I'm Paul Blackwell, and I also spoke to Mr. James Barbel today. He's in Raleigh and unable to be here.
Jack Walsh.
All right. The first item on our agenda is always public comment, and it's nice to see some public here tonight. So whatever comments anybody has, if you would please, if you want to start, whoever wants to start, come up to one of the microphones here. And just give us a rundown on what you'd like to say. We don't draw straws.
Thank you all. My name is Laura St. Clair, and I have a 10-acre farm on Pace Road in Hendersonville. I raise Hanoverian horses. It's a German breed. And the issue that I've had, this is my second meeting, I love everything about it, except I have a neighbor with fighting roosters. Right now, as of this morning, there were 60 right next door. He has about an acre of property. So it's been wonderful. I've been able to talk to Vince and to Paul as well and just look for some possible solutions so that I can really enjoy my property and it's safe for me and for my grandchildren and for my animals and so forth, and it is not a nuisance for my use and my neighbors, and also to keep the property values is moving in the right direction. So that's why I'm here. I've been doing a lot of research on what I think could be some changes that you may in the future want to consider, but I'm not at that point to present anything yet, but I just want you to know that it is a big issue. It really impacts my life and the safety and health of my animals. And the one thing that I can add since the last meeting is I've gotten the state of North Carolina involved, and there is an ordinance if you have poultry running at large, it is up to a $5,000 fine. And so my neighbor was notified by the state. They came out, they've certified my property, and they've notified them of that, and that has made a big difference in terms of keeping animals each on his property. But it's a real health issue, and so anyway, it's something that I really appreciate your support, and I'm looking for solutions for that.
What kind of I'll ask a question. What kind of answers did you get from the state? What did they besides sending them, giving them notice, yeah, and everything? Has what's happened since then, and kind of a timeline? How long ago was it that they did this?
Boy, that was probably July that they came out and met with me and did a full certification on my property. And they went immediately next door because at that time there were probably, 22 dozen, I would say, of the poultry, of my neighbor's poultry on my property. They went over and notified him. And within about 48 hours, he'd pretty much rounded up everything.
Okay.
And but as of today, that doesn't include the fighting roosters, which are all kept in separate cages. And as of this morning, we counted about 60 of those. So if you've ever been around that kind of noise, I mean, I love the sounds of the country, but if you've ever been around that kind of density, it changes the nature of your life. So anyway.
Corporal Griggs, do you have anything that you can add to that, any of the experiences as far as, like, have you found anything crazy during any visits out that way, or?
No, we've been speaking quite a bit in the past. She's emailed me a lot of good information from the state. But the problem we run into on our end is roosters are kind of under livestock. So under noise complaints, we have issues with them being in violation of noise complaints because they're livestock. So the some of the things that we'd like to look at some point in time is getting together and trying to figure out a way, you know, is a rooster in a cage, would that be considered real life, using it for farming purposes or not?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the things in the county, they are breeding them for other means than what would be traditional farming needs. So it's to find out what we can do about that from our end to bring it in.
Noise ordinance.
Who enforces the poultry at large rule?
On her end, the state came out and did a job on that. On our end, we can do the livestock running at large. It would be a fine of up to $50 a bird or poultry, whatever animal it is. It could be a cow, and it could run you up to $50 per animal for the livestock running at large.
Off the owner's property,
yeah. And then also there's a state law in effect for livestock running at large as well, so you can actually arrest somebody for it if it came down to that.
Now, is there any cap on how many you could have?
No.
They could have an acre, which they have, and they could have like a billion of them?
Yes. There's no restrictions on livestock per acreage at all. So you can have a horse on a half-acre lot. You can have two cows on a half-acre lot. As long as you're feeding them water and maintaining them and keeping them healthy, that's the only thing the law requires on it.
Is it open-use zoning where you're at?
I am R2R. Is okay. It R2R?
R2 rural.
Yes.
Okay.
So we have this problem in other places, too. Like, there's actually on Little River Road just outside of the village of Flat Rock.
Mm-hmm.
In a housing development there, we have we get calls in from there. He's got five or six roosters, you know, and it's in a tight housing development, but the same laws apply. There's no restrictions in any of the things to prohibit you from having them in the county.
Unless it's like a covenant of a community or a
home. Yeah, and then that would go, yeah, if the housing development had like an HOA and said you couldn't have them,
mm-hmm.
but that would be a civil issue through the HOA, not involving our agency.
I'm concerned about their fighting animals, they're raised for fighting, because we do have, it shall be illegal to own, keep, or harbor an animal, not a dog or cat, an animal, for the purpose of fighting other animals.
It is not illegal. You would have, okay.
That's it.
It is... illegal to fight the roosters.
Uh-huh.
It's not illegal to have the roosters. So unless you actually catch them in a fight, there is no violation.
Okay.
So that's where we come in. And then if you catch the fight, that's a blood sport. That's a big charge. Everybody's watching it goes to jail.
Mm-hmm.
So any blood, dog fighting, cock fighting, all those things, that's a blood sport. It's a felony charge right out of the gate.
So have you ever seen him load them up and take them somewhere?
I haven't. They disappear. I've never really seen the activity. No, I haven't actually seen when they've packed them up. But they definitely, you know, they disappear and then more come.
Is there any reason to have one except for a fight? I mean, does anybody have... If it's a fighting rooster.
More than one rooster.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're making an assumption
right.
that they're fighting.
No, I'm asking if there's any.
But, yes, anyone can have a rooster. I mean, if you want to have fertile eggs, you've got to have a rooster. So.
Okay.
Now, to have eggs, you don't have to have a rooster to make right. an egg.
An
but
egg.
If you want a fertile egg, you must have a rooster. So, yes, a lot of folks have roosters in their farms and their family flocks for whatever reason.
And typically speaking, if you have more than one rooster in a pen, they will generally fight anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Roosters are pretty territorial.
But these are all in individual pens.
That's correct. Yes, that's correct.
So a lot of times when you go out and talk to a farmer who has more than one rooster or people who have more than one rooster, they'll tell you, well, we put them in the same coop, they're going to fight each other, and one of them's going to win, one of them's going to lose. Because roosters, they don't get along.
Okay.
Typically.
But if I can add something, too, in terms of the noise, when you have a group of roosters, it's sort of a hierarchy. I've done a lot of research on all these studies and so forth about these animals, and you have a hierarchy, and the number one rooster starts, and then the 59 others go right after, and then it starts over again. And it's extremely loud. There's actually research that roosters themselves have a special ear that keeps them from damaging their own hearing. Whereas other animals, I had a filly born at my farm, don't have that. So it's it is extremely loud.
But there's no noise ordinance.
So thank you for listening.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Have you approached the county about changing the noise ordinance to include?
That's kind of why I'm sort of doing this research here now.
The noise ordinance is under Chapter 18, not in this realm at all.
Yeah.
So that's something that we're going to be working with, I guess, Russ, the county attorney, to try to look at doing some of that stuff. The research that she's gathering is going to be used for that. But, yeah, we'll have to get some type of ordinance change for the noise ordinance on that. We try to do what we can on these things when the deputies go out to determine whether or not you got a livestock or a non-livestock issue. But at the end of the day, it's written the way it is, so we have to be pretty careful in how we determine what we're determining.
Can I just say, because Catherine's trying to hear everyone, if you could speak, I can see that you're speaking in your mic. Vince, if you could also speak in your mic. We can hear you, but Catherine is trying to participate as much as she can.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Thanks for listening.
And I do have a question. So there's no regulation that would impact a change if you're from where you are now and then somebody moves into more of a neighborhood that's, not
covenants or something.
Yeah. Well, not the covenants, but just, you know, it's not living out on the farm if it's living, like, in a neighborhood in town. There's nothing that changes.
Not that I'm aware of. Now, that would be a zoning board issue.
Right.
And zoning can come out in certain places and look at that. But to my knowledge, no.
That was why I asked how that property was zoned out there and everything. That was my curiosity.
Yeah, in doing this research, obviously it's a big issue in many parts of the country. And one of the ways that they've sort of handled it is to say that you have to be a certain distance. And that may be something that would make sense, because you may still be in, you may have a farm, but if you're next to this, it'll be the same as in a subdivision. I mean, I was approached by a filmmaker who is doing some of these shorts at Tryon, and he said, "Can I film at your farm? It's perfect. It's exactly what I need." And I said, "There's no way you could do it, because the sound is just unbearable." So it's just one example of how, you know, I mean, it really impacts the use and the lively, you know, what I had expected to be able to enjoy.
I just feel so bad for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you for listening. And, you know, I'm hoping
do something or support you.
Thank you.
And she has done a lot of legwork on this, which is great, because I'll be honest with you, I don't have the time to do all the legwork that she's put into this. And so she's emailed us, like, stuff on this to go through. So it's just a matter of filtering through everything. The state's really helped her out a lot, which is a great avenue.
Yeah.
So it's just trying to compile everything in, and then we'll have to make the meeting with the county attorney for the noise ordinance side. As far as an animal ordinance side for Chapter 16 of the rooster itself, we'd have to start breaking down. Between what state would allow us to implement into an ordinance as far as livestock would go.
Now, if it's is cockfighting illegal?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
oh,
so
yes.
What if somebody were to follow them and find out what they are doing? Would that...
We get tips on these things. Everything that's going on right now, it's generally not happening in our county.
We have a pretty active unit. When we get a tip, we start setting up on stuff. A lot of these things, they go down to South Carolina and do.
Okay.
That's what we're being informed on. But if we find out of one, the problem to catch them is they're by invitation only.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a certain group holding these things generally. So they'll say, okay, like Friday night at this place, and you'll have two people show up with two roosters. They'll have some makeshift pen they throw up real quick. They'll throw them in there, have the fight, and it's done in a minute. And then they pack up and they're out.
And there's a lot of money involved in this industry.
Yeah.
And they're pretty well organized, and they know how to escape, you know, detection for sure. Yeah.
We've had some that we were told were being actually done inside buildings and things to where we just can't walk into. We'd have to have probable cause and obtain a search warrant to get inside, and by the time you got that done, it would be over. So these things, just you have to really be on top of it, and somebody's really got to just have the right information at the right time. Saying that, though, it is a felony spectator sport, so if someone were to follow this and view it and watch it, then themselves at some point may be getting themselves hemmed up a little bit, you know. Especially if they didn't call until, like, later and stuff.
I'd say that would be hard to, if you were the guy bringing the intel, you're not getting in trouble.
It gets kind of hairy on some of those lines, though.
Yeah. I get it.
So you want it because it's a felony spectator sport. Anybody there watching it goes to jail.
Is there a home on that property?
There is.
Okay.
Yes, it's a rock house, and I had it put on the National Historic Register after I bought it.
I'm talking about the other property.
Oh, the other property. There is a mobile home on the property, and they built according to zoning, they're building a party pavilion, a two-level party pavilion.
Mm.
So we'll see. Yeah.
What's a party pavilion?
I'm not sure.
Maybe
I'm wondering myself. I don't know. We're going to find out.
Home, I'm not sure that's where I'd put my money.
Yeah.
Okay. And then just curious, do you know if they've gotten approved for that or what?
For the party pavilion?
Hmm?
I searched the permit center. It is in the permit center, yes.
Okay, has it been approved?
It seems to be, yeah, along the way. They're just making changes. I'm not exactly sure what's...
You're fabulous.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Help. I'm available. I believe in this. So.
The reason I'm asking that is because the zoning where you live at is for primarily residential.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I can't swear to this, but I think if they were going to do something, because if they're going to do a party pavilion, and if that's for outside, like if they're going to have people come in, do events and things like there, like weddings or whatever, that ventures into the commercial side, and they would
uh-huh.
have to get a variance for that.
Uh-huh. I don't know.
So that's kind of what I'm curious
okay.
about.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Easy enough.
I'll do a little more research on that too. I was surprised. I had not heard of that use, but that's what's on the, you know, but I'll do a little more investigating myself.
It's the difference between like an R2 and R2 rural
mm-hmm.
just has, it's all about housing density per acre
okay.
is all
right.
it is.
Okay.
And according to that, they allow 5 units per acre, or you can have a home, a duplex, whatever, stuff
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it generally speaking, it has to do with housing density.
Okay.
And like regular R2, I think you can like have up to, it's R1. You can have like up to 12 units per
okay.
acre.
Okay.
And then R3, you can only have like 1 unit per acre and a half.
Okay. Okay.
So it's very different as far as your zoning goes.
Okay.
But yeah, that's why I was asking that question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do a little more research on that too, but thank you.
Mm-hmm. We have more public?
We're just here to listen.
Well, by golly. Easy enough then. Easy enough. All right. Well, if we're done with public comment, thank you for coming out.
Yeah. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Thanks for coming back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll move on to our agenda for tonight. First thing on the agenda is scheduling of dangerous dog hearings. Brad's passed out the calendar coming up for this.
We only need shelter to do through January 9th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I was going to ask about that, too, how many of us are coming off in after January? I know I am. And Patty is.
Y'all three.
And Donna should be. Yeah, so that's three of us after January 9th.
Can we vote to keep you on?
I think you have to talk to, what is the lady's name, Terry?
Oh, I like her. She likes us.
Terry,
you might not like me.
And it's not up to Terry, of course. You know,
Board of Commissioners.
Yeah, it's the Board of Commissioners. They set the.
They would have to do a variance
schedules
or something.
Schedules in place, but
the you know somebody I've approached, and this is for everybody here. If y'all know of anybody, of course, if you know of anybody who you feel would be a good addition to the committee. And everything, knowing that we have three vacancies that are going to be coming up in January, by all means, have them go to the Henderson County website and apply like the rest of us did. And if they want to volunteer, you know, I've got one person, I know you know Megan Cockman and everything. I've talked with her personally, and I hope that she submits an application because she would be a wonderful person to have up here and everything. She's just absolutely awesome. If y'all can think of anybody, you know, please pass that along to them because, you know, this participation here is very important. And, you know, I remember when I first started this thing, I was like, we're filling in. I'll just check it out and see. But after being on this thing for how many years have we been on? Almost nine, close to nine. Yeah. Patty and I started filling in for, yeah, her too. Yeah, we started filling
in.
Some people had dropped off, and we filled in for them. And then we were, you know, we were
Fuckers.
Allowed to fill in too.
Yeah. Stayed around for 9 years. So yeah, that's good. Good job.
But if y'all know of anybody, please by all means pass that along. I've got somebody in mind as well that I think would be a good addition, so I'll make sure they know that. So through January 9th at a bare minimum.
Are we filling this out now? We're filling in spots?
That's how we've done it in the past.
Yeah.
I'm in for the 25th of November.
And if you're not sure, I mean, we'll just get as much as we can, and then it just makes it easier going down the road.
All right, November 25th, I'm available.
I can do the 14th.
Okay. Who's got the master?
You're co-chair right now, right?
You're filling in?
I'm filling. Are you?
I mean, I'm just writing wrong.
Right, so Donna, you said November 25th. Patty, 14th.
Correct.
You're co-chair this year.
Except for Thanksgiving.
Patty
I'm,
is.
I'm
no, Catherine's vice chair.
Catherine.
Catherine.
Sorry. So you
okay.
Donna got to be here.
One of the two of us. Yeah. Ask.
Okay.
Ask Catherine.
Catherine, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Looking at your calendar, are you available to serve on the Dangerous Dog Committee on either October 29th, November 14th, November 25th, December 12th, December 23rd, or January 9th?
Just easy enough then, you know what, let Catherine do the ones on the left side of the page and just put me down for the ones on the right side of the page.
Okay.
That's easy enough.
Catherine, December 12th. You want to write that down?
Okay.
Write her down. I don't want to fill in.
Okay. Now let her know for, one of us has to be at the meeting. So if she can do November 14th, December 12th, and January 9th,
oh, I see. Yes.
I'll do November 25th, December 23rd, and not January 30th, of course. Put me down on October 29th, though.
Okay.
So that gives you both three.
So,
yeah.
Catherine, November 14th and January 9th also.
And December 12th.
November 14th,
mm-hmm.
Yes, and January 9th. Just those two?
No, three.
December 12th.
I had already said December 12th. So these are the three dates. November 14th.
November 12th, November 14th.
No, it's awesome.
Yes.
And Brad, I'll do October 29th, November 25th, and December 23rd.
Got it.
That covers us?
Yeah.
Okay.
That covers the chair and vice chair spots.
And then everybody else can fill in the blanks there.
Okay.
Except for Thanksgiving, I'm fine.
I'll let you, we'll let everybody work on that here while we're doing some other stuff and everything, but there's going to be three spots open on everything, so whatever y'all come up with calendar-wise, just let me know. Catherine's got one side of the calendar, and I've got the other side as far as chair, co-chair being here. Let me see. And... Brad, while some of the folks are working on that, do you want to bring up about the fee changes for the shelter? Do you have time?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, for November 25th?
I'm just wanting everybody's attention, though, so I don't know.
All right. Let's let Brad talk about the fee changes here.
Yeah, we can do this. You know, y'all can email me or John, and what I'll do is I'll email what I've got so far.
Okay.
And then y'all can email me or John and
that'll
let
work.
Us know. So, what's the
possible fees.
So we've got that. So the scheduling, the possible fee changes. So currently, can you hear me okay, Catherine?
Catherine, can you hear Brad?
Probably not.
I'm thinking.
Sorry, yes, I can hear you. I'm
starting
on mute. Okay.
Okay, Catherine.
My wife does that to me all the time.
So the next thing on the agenda, Catherine, is possible fee changes for the shelter. And what this is referring to are intake fees and boarding that folks have to pay when their animal is brought to the shelter. So currently, our fee schedule is our intake fee. When an animal comes through the door, it's $40. And then each additional day, it's $5. So what I'm wanting to do, and this isn't anything that we approve in the ordinance, this is part of our budget ordinance, but I think whenever I'm presenting my budget going forward, that if I have, you know, y'all's blessing on whatever fee schedule I come up with, I think that'll help me out. But I've had some citizens approach me that are concerned about the cost of the initial intake fee. We've had times where animals have came in and the person came out within an hour and got their animal, so they're $40 there in the hole. That doesn't include the microchip that they're required to buy and also rabies, which, you know, those are all good things, and those are services that they're getting. But and our $5 per day boarding fee is well below market rate. So what I'm proposing, or what I would propose, is that we decrease our intake fee. So that would be decreasing our where it is now, it's $40. And what I would like to do is decrease it to around $20 and then increase our per day boarding $10 per day. That incentivizes people to come in and get their animals quicker.
You're saying the increase of 10 above the 5 to 15 or just 10?
To 10. And then I would even go so far as if we look like we're going to have an animal for an extended amount of time, be it cruelty cases and things like that, that's a significant impact on the shelter. And I think I could justify bumping that up after, say, a dog's been there for 2 weeks up to $15 per day. So that's a different subject, though, that is on the I'm going to touch on with our next item. So that's just something I'm toying with. We're getting close to the budget process. Our budget process is from starts July. Our fiscal year starts July 1.
Who's complaining about the 40? Are these people that are chronic offenders of their dogs being taken in regularly?
Not all of them, you know.
But most of the complaints come from people who don't keep up with their animals.
Right.
Then I wouldn't lower it.
Yeah. Well,
I wouldn't.
It just it's easier for us from a standpoint of getting animals out of the shelter. You know, if we have a $40 intake fee and then the dog's there 2 days, I hate to say it, people have a hard time coming up with 60, but then you got to include the 35 for the microchip and other things. So
rough idea of percentages that are like within a day or a day or two? Or
most of the time if an animal's going to get reclaimed, it's within 3 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what is the cost for the microchip?
35.
And why don't you just add it in?
I do. That's something that we can't change. That's something that's an agreement we've got with local vets.
And what does it cost to have the to have the pet brought in?
$40 for the intake fee.
The actual cost for the shelter.
Oh, about $200 per animal if you break it down budget wise.
Yeah,
we're never going to recover cost.
Don't do it half. Do it like 30. Or, you know, reduce it a little bit and see if that works.
Do you think you'll see an increase of just people, you know, if they've not come within a week and, you know, you up this to 10 and then it gets to be, you know, if we're having trouble with someone paying $40 and $60 to get them back after 1 day, are you going to end up having more animals that are just not claimed, because then at 2 weeks I've got, you know, $200 invested in this and I just don't have it to get the dog back or the pet back.
Do you think that somebody would do they leave them for that long, for 2 weeks?
Some never get picked up.
But that's a different category, right? That's just abandoned.
Yeah, most of the time if they don't get picked up, it's not a money issue. It's not
a money issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, what you're saying then is it's if they don't have a microchip, then the very first day, that's $80 for that first day, basically.
75, yeah, 80.
Well, 40, 40, 40 35, 80. And 5 for, so $80 the first day. Yeah, okay.
It starts adding up pretty quick, and it's, I think Brad mentioned too, if he takes an animal in and you come within an hour, that's $40 plus. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, it does get
steep. And things
steep.
Happen with people. I've had animals get, we all have things happen. Mm-hmm. And there are people who, and those are some of the people that have complained. I probably, if I was in their shoes, I might would too, or I wouldn't be even bringing this up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the dog gets out, gets picked up by somebody, and, you know, maybe a lot of times you have construction workers that let the dog out, landscaper, you know, maintenance people. Mm-hmm. And so it's just something, it's nothing we have to decide tonight. Or
maybe a suggestion for you, if maybe possibly reduce the intake fee if somebody comes same day that you pick it up and they come to get it. Maybe reduce it for that day.
Yeah.
You know?
Or maybe a 24-hour period or something.
Yeah, or a grace period, a 24-hour grace period. If they come and get it within 24 hours, don't charge them anything or charge a reduced rate. And then after that first day.
You have to charge something. I mean, because your guys' time and efforts and money and food and water. And
I may even look at what other counties do too, some. But
yeah.
Just an idea. I'm just trying to.
What goes into taking one in? I mean, from the time that someone drops it off. I mean, the card's filled out, the kennel's prepared, shots are given. I mean, what happens?
We could be calling microchip. I mean, it could, you just need, it's more than I can tell you. You just need to come out and spend the day with us.
It's worth $40.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot involved with that.
Yeah.
But in the same token, I kind of agree with John in the sense if you were able to get there within 24 hours or 12-hour period or whatever you want to set it and to say.
Right.
I don't think that there should be no fee. I think there's still maybe a reduced fee.
Yeah.
But I don't – certainly your time and money and efforts are worth something.
You're still going to have to clean up wherever the dog's at.
And if you have to – you know, and of course you're not going to let it go without being microchipped. So, of course, microchip it, charging for that. But I still say maybe a reduced rate if somebody picks it up within the first 24 hours.
It might not be something bad. Voucher system, so they just purchase the voucher from us and they take it to the vet to have it done, because we legally cannot microchip a somebody's
someone,
animal.
And someone mentioned also that about the repeat offenders. Mm-hmm. The repeat offenders usually end up with citations from us.
Yeah, they can get hit.
But you're talking about, Jack was talking about what goes into it. There is a lot that goes into it.
Oh, yeah.
And due to the fact that I work closely with the shelter, yeah, I've seen a lot of it, and I see both sides of this. Personally, I think maybe the $20, the reduced rate would be a good thing for a short period of time because a lot of people do come in. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you were talking about the cleaning and that type of stuff. Yes, it still has to happen again. But that gets that animal in and out. Gets them in
and
out.
And that's more
quicker.
Valuable than the money.
Yeah,
it really is.
If y'all
is.
Want to see our live rates keep increasing, if that's more valuable to you than money, then that's the direction we need to be going.
Okay.
Well, and if that's important to you and you can live without the extra $20
Doing
your budgeting, then absolutely. Yeah. If it works for you, then...
I mean, we're not an enterprise fund and never will be, so... but just ideas.
To ever break even, they would have to charge boarding kennel fees.
Yeah.
It would be extreme.
$5 is...
$5
I
is
we would
$5.
Be stuck with a lot of people's animals
if we were trying to recover
our true cost. Yeah.
Base cost, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're doing an excellent job.
Maybe you could have the right to reduce for an individual because of money. Is that possible?
No, you can't change. You can't treat people different. Yeah, you get on a slippery slope.
It just needs to be a time frame
a
that's everyone's eligible for. I don't think you can pick and choose who is and who isn't based off of whatever
you don't
criteria.
Want to down that road.
What was her? What did she say for who?
There's a basis reduced rates for people that couldn't pay. Or
what about repeat offenders? Having a higher rate than, I mean, because
they've got the ability to go out and hit them with fines if that's the case.
And with repeat offenders.
And then they've got 30 days to pay it versus having to pay it to get their animal out.
Yeah, they get a citation.
Does go up. The citation does increase.
You remember that scale that we did? Yeah, that one. Mm-hmm.
Let's hope they honor it.
The next thing, shelter operations. Me and Paul and Vince have talked about this a lot, and we've even had the meeting with the county attorney and Judge Britton. It's been a couple weeks or 2 weeks, or last week, I don't know. Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it? So, but we're trying to identify ways to get animals out of the shelter faster, which kind of goes with the fee schedules, but we currently, right now, we have got 4 animals at the shelter. How long have the web dogs been there? 3 months? 4 months?
3 months.
3 months.
Mm.
That's 2 spaces I've got locked up. I can't do anything with. I've got another one that has just came in, and that dog's there at least towards the end of the month and maybe another month. And then I've got another dog that just came in this week that will have it 2-3 months, probably 3 months. So what I'm making you guys aware of is we have got a situation that could get out of hand to where we've got a finite amount of kennel space. We've got animals coming in, stray animals, and by statute, and we hold them longer than this, but by statute we have to hold them 72 hours. If we keep going down this road of when we have a cruelty case or a dangerous dog violation, now this is the part that you guys don't see. After a dog's deemed dangerous, you guys do the hearings and decide to uphold them or not, but if the person's found a violation of keeping that dog, and y'all are all aware of what those stipulations are, that dog comes with and stays at the shelter until that court case is adjudicated, which can take months.
Hmm.
When I first started, I had some dogs there that were there for over a year, 3 Great Pyrenees. So what I would like to do is do something similar to what we're already doing with large animals. Large animals we contract out with other places to take large animals because we just don't have a place for large animals. And sometimes there's times when we have to take them because they're running at large or there have been cruelty cases. What I would like to do is do a similar type thing with our animals that are at the shelter for cruelty. Dangerous dogs, I really don't feel comfortable farming that out. The dangerous dogs, if we can do it legally, me and Paul and Vince have talked about, you know, the evidence, you know, they can be considered evidence. But I think if we had the right MOU with the participating facilities, that we could make it work because we're already doing it with large animals. We have had large animals at off-site places. And I'm not going to mention any court cases, but you can know the one we had the most recent. It's probably been 4 years ago. Had all the horses, but we had those horses for a good while, and he did have to. He was ordered to pay restitution in the end. So I'm just trying to think of ways that I can alleviate, keeping me from getting gridlocked. We're not there now, but I'm not doing my job if I'm not looking down the road and trying to identify the problem and get on top of it.
What does that kennel space cost? Like when you farm it out?
We don't know. We got what I'm asking from this board is that, you know, we maybe put something or request that it's even considered. Because what will happen then is if it's even considered by the Board of Commissioners, they're going to, if they're considered even doing it, then we would start seeing how much it's going to cost. Yeah, I hate to go to places and ask and price it out and then, you know, say, oh, well, we can't even do it. Mm-hmm. So this is what I identified as the most important place to start was here and then. So I don't even know if it has to be put in the ordinance because us doing large animals like that is not in the ordinance. Now, if we wanted to do dangerous dog, I'd say we did, but I'm with, dangerous dog, I think that they need to stay at the shelter.
So for sure. Just the cruelty animals sure.
animals, yeah.
Being fostered out.
Which right now all we have are the four dangerous dogs.
We've had cases in the past where... Yeah. We've taken in as many as 24 dogs, one cat, mm-hmm. and in the same week we took in 24 cats and one dog.
Yeah.
That was 50 animals within just a few days. And fortunately, it worked out.
And I'll tell you why it does work out. It's because
they could have been there for a long
organizations
time.
Like Blue Ridge and other organizations. If we didn't have those partnerships with those folks, we'd be having to put a lot of animals down. Mm-hmm. And that goes for every day, but especially in times like that when we have these cases, and I'm just throwing an example out there, like hoarders or, you know, something like that. About 12 years ago when I first started, we seized 40-plus animals from a residence. And back then, the Department of Agriculture was not quite as stringent on how many animals you had in a run. But now they're pretty picky about how many animals you have in a room. So I was able to, you know, save some kennel space by grouping some of those animals together back then. But today, I would not get away with that. So, and they were all animals from the house. I wasn't putting animals that don't know each other together. And, you know, the owner advised us to which ones got along good. But even with that, we could be found in violation of keeping multiple animals in a kennel. So... things have changed on that front. So, really no action to take tonight on this. It's just letting you guys know. But it's got to change because these guys have got a job to do. They've got to do their job. And, you know, we've got to have places for these animals. But they can't all be at the shelter.
I think you're on the right track of being proactive to the situation before you do get somewhere and have some set places to say, if this happens, can we bring
animals
too. I think that's fine.
Yeah.
It's on the right track.
That's all I've got on that.
The other, the only other option is to build onto the shelter. And due to space out there and due to building costs the way they are, it'll be very difficult.
And plus, you're looking at 10 runs. If we get this established, we're looking at two or three runs committed, you know, to all the boarding kennels. I don't know how many there are around. There's probably at least five. Three, even if three times five, you know, that's 15 more runs, you know. And, you know, we're using them on an as-need basis. And the person is responsible for those costs, those boarding costs. So theoretically, we would recover that cost in restitution. Yeah.
Take a lot of burden off of the shelter and the county.
Yeah. I don't.
So that may be something we have to, which is already in state law that they're responsible during a court case that they have to pay for boarding. That's all I've got on that.
Mm-hmm. Next up on the agenda then, Corporal Vince Griggs, possible ordinance changes.
Brought the files.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Vince, just a reminder, if you could speak as much as possible into the mic.
I've got one, yeah.
Wow.
He's done a good job. It shouldn't take long.
Really,
it
looks
thank
good.
You.
Really looks really impressive. I like it.
Don't
scare us right off the
bat.
Like,
where he'd like to see changes.
You
want
to bring donuts? I don't know what's up with that.
So I hope you can follow along.
And I think I wasn't at the last meeting, but I remember I was at the meeting before that, and this stuff was even brought up at that meeting. So this has been stuff that's been talked about.
I got that email, Patty, so I've got it open.
Okay.
This has been talked about. This is mainly what we're going to go
with. Okay, yeah, this is.
Look, we've got some changes in here.
That chihuahua is Vince's pet, by the way.
Y'all aren't supposed to, like, be flipping through the pages. That last part
is
was supposed
true?
To be for you guys to enjoy all this meeting.
What's her his name?
Who?
Your doe.
Oh, the killer. That's Oscar Mayer. I'm gonna have to keep all the stuff out next time. Hand it in one page at a time.
I just don't even know how to react.
Yeah. So, just to touch a little bit on what Brad just talked about, we just had a dog at the shelter for 6 months on a cruelty case.
A dog who what?
Who was at the shelter for 6 months on a cruelty case that needed medical attention and things, and all that burden went to the shelter. So what he's doing on trying to get this stuff fixed is good.
Thank you.
Is that better?
Did the owner did he give him up, or did he just not
going to
pay?
We got
or?
The dog finally at.
Took six
when,
months.
Yeah, it took 6 months to go to court and to win the case, and then we won the dog when through the case. But she wouldn't surrender the dog during the trial periods, and it kept, you know, cases in court, they get continued and continued and continued. And I'm sure it was out there at least 6 months.
I think the dog. Yeah, you're right, because it came in April.
Yeah.
Yeah. So almost 6 months.
This was a very old dog and it had some issues going on, and it was an extra strain on the shelter. So, but on the ordinance changes, on the left-hand side, that's just the top part there is just going over that neglect stuff we were talking about last time. I haven't been able to work any more on that, but I put this together for you guys to keep take home so you can look at it and come up with ideas and questions on stuff as they come up. On the second part, on the restraint ordinance, we did talk a little bit last time about increasing the fees for dogs running at large in the county, and that's in there as well. I'd like for y'all to discuss that some and see what we can do about increasing those things. On one half of it is for non-aggressive, and the other half is aggressive. You guys have all said on dangerous dog cases before, and the question, do we deem every dog dangerous? No, we don't. But sometimes they get out and they're aggressive. They don't meet that qualification as a dangerous or potentially dangerous dog, but there needs to be a little bit more consequences for the actions. And we feel that that consequence should be at least a $50 higher fine for each incident. And that's listed in there. So the dog's just running around at large. And it says first time $50. We generally give a warning for dogs just running at large the first time. But it's kind of an option that we have. So the first time would be a $50 fine if it's just running at large. If it was semi-aggressive or in that type of manner, that fine would automatically go up to $100 for the first time. And then as it goes on down, it just increases $50 increments all the way down. After about the third to fourth time of a dog running at large, we can look at the nuisance ordinance and seem about deeming it as a nuisance. And that's why I went down that many times for the fines. But you got to have a pattern. Sorry. You have to have a pattern down in order to deem it a nuisance. So, but to write somebody a $50 ticket every time is not fixing the issue. But when you start increasing that payment, a lot of times that'll fix the issue. So that's what we'd like to do is look at increasing those fines for canines running at large and then have the two categories. We're asking for deputy judgment on what's aggressive and what's not. And that's so we don't tie the hands of the deputies when they're out there. Every case is a little different. I trust the guys that work for us to make the right calls on that.
You want us to speak to this?
Yes, ma'am. If you guys have any questions, by all means.
I'm wondering why you go to a fourth time. I think that's extremely generous of you.
Thank you. I try to be nice.
Okay.
To deem a dog a nuisance.
Each time I've been out.
To deem a dog a nuisance, there has to be a set pattern of the violations. Mm-hmm. So a canine running at large over three times in a decent period of time, we can look at deeming that dog a nuisance. And then once we do that, then obviously it's just like a deeming a dog dangerous in some aspects. We fill out the form. They have the right to appeal it before the board. But then the county can come in and say, you're going to build a fence to keep this dog in. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're looking at. But I have to have that pattern time. And after the way the ordinance reads is three times you may be able to get it. But, you know, we're hitting four times, and we wrote these people increments up. I think it just helps us with our case.
Makes your case better.
It makes our case better. And then when we come before the board, you know, you're looking at it like, dude, you went from $50 to $200 and didn't fix the problem. You know, it just helps us out long run, and it just helps us out with it. But if there's any aggression to it, you know, every dog that comes out and barks at somebody, we don't deem dangerous. Mm-hmm. But there's instances where the dog is aggressive, like maybe standoffish with somebody, maybe not really trying to attack them. Obviously, that would be a dangerous dog or potentially a dangerous dog, but just at bay with them. That would be like an aggression fine. So it's $50 more for something like that.
Mm-hmm. I guess because I see the neglect ordinance has three offenses and
yes,
stops
ma'am.
At that.
Yeah.
And I guess I just think, you know, bearing in mind your time
mm-hmm.
and, you know, have they not skipped to the nuisance on your fourth visit out there? Have they not skipped to the nuisance?
They can. And right now we've gone to houses where they've – technically may have met the nuisance ordinance, but sometimes a time frame is not good. Like, you know, we if a dog runs loose today, all right, there's one, but then it's a month later for two, and then 2 months later for three, I wouldn't deem that dog a nuisance, but I would charge them $150 for the dog running at large because there's a problem. But now if that dog runs large every day, then obviously we got a shorter time span and we can look at deeming it a nuisance. Mm-hmm. We don't want to just start deeming, because we could deem just a lot of dogs a nuisance in this county, and it would just flood our system, it would flood your system, mm-hmm. If we just went based on how the ordinance is actually written versus using judgment in it. So if your dog gets out running loose today, then next month, and then 2 months down, your fine still goes up, even though we wouldn't be deeming your dog a nuisance.
And also, Patty, on the neglect ordinance, you have to remember, too, it is only showing three, but those are the ones that are borderline. Once it goes into mistreatment, then you're talking about a $500 fine. And that's the only alternative that the sheriff had before. If we came up and the water bowl was empty and you could tell it had been empty for a while, but that was the only violation, the only thing we had, the only teeth, so to speak, that we had was a $500 fine. And we just felt that was not fair at all. So the neglect versus mistreatment. Mm-hmm. And this would give us an opportunity to work with them and see if it was going to escalate into a mistreatment.
My sense, Paul, is that support. I guess I just saw the fourth time and I thought,
yeah,
is that really a good time?
Well,
it's kind of
two different things, because on the other one, we had to set the pattern. Mm-hmm. On this one, if we go and it's a definitely a case of mistreatment, we forego all this, mm-hmm, completely. And then we look at possible criminal charges and a $500 citation as well. So we've got this one, we have the teeth on. The second one, we didn't. But with this one, we do.
Okay.
Do people that get these citations, do they go to, like, traffic court? Or where do they go to pay that? Or do they fight them all?
That's the cool thing about these citations. These are all civil citations that we write. So they come to the sheriff's office and pay it, and the fine goes back to, I believe, the school board for that. So the sheriff's office, we don't get any of the money. However, if you don't pay your citation within 30 days, one of four things will happen. You will definitely get a phone call telling you you're late for your fine. And one of the other three things is you'll either get a criminal ticket, like a speeding ticket, or you'll get a criminal summons to come to court, or we'll come handcuff you and take you to jail for failure to pay your fines. And then when it goes to court for that, then you could try to contest the underlying charge, but the actual charge we go to court for is failure to pay your fines. So they can contest it at the end of the day if they choose to do so. But it has to go to criminal court for that. We don't have a board to listen to the citation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You guys will be meeting a lot.
Is this really his dog?
Is this really your dog?
We hadn't got to the dog yet.
I need to get to the dog.
So, but that's the thing on the fines. On the nuisance part, on the neglect ordinance, mm-hmm, I haven't really wrote anything up. This is kind of what we're looking at. As an example, we'll have to get, we've been really busy, and it's our really busy time of year, and I hadn't had a lot of time to actually sit down and write a actual line-by-line ordinance on the neglect side. But on the restraint law, I'd like to know if you guys would approve these fees being changed.
Does that require a motion? Do you need to seek a motion?
No. Is that something for us tonight or the next one?
We could do it on the next one if you'd like, give time for people to look over and ask any more questions they have about it. But
yeah, you've given us a good little bit of material to digest for tonight, so I think we probably, it might be, unless you're in a ball of fire hurry, we can...
Once you guys approve it, I have to give it to the county attorney, who has to write it up and get it on the commissioner's agenda.
Sure.
So, it's not going to happen tomorrow anyway.
Well, except this is going to be a three-month delay if we wait until the next meeting.
And then probably 3 months to get on the commissioner's board.
No, that part I understand. I was just...
Yeah.
6 months.
Before. What would take us...
Well, and I'm not talking about the neglect side of it. I know that needs to be held open because I haven't even written out an actual anything on it yet. I got just the rough draft of what we're looking at on there to give you an idea of where we're going. Mm-hmm. But on the restraint ordinance, that's what we're going to ask for, is those fees to go up.
And usually when we've had ordinance changes in the past, the changes that we do end up approving, that we vote on and approve or disapprove have been finalized as far as how it's actually going to be written, submitted, and enshrined in law, basically. Mm-hmm. So this, and Vince has a this is a good rough draft and everything, but yeah, that's usually what we do. So that was my question on that. I don't think it's a matter of approving tonight or anything. We got steps we have to go to before we do that. So, but 3 months by the time we come back in January, though, will you have had time to have this kind of fleshed out?
On the neglect, I doubt it. But on the actual fines that we're looking at changing, mm-hmm. for the restraint law, and there's two separate sections on this. First one is the neglect. That's just to give you an idea where we're going. The second part on the restraint ordinance, that's the change we're asking for. What you see written there is what we're going to ask to be written in the ordinance. Nothing in the ordinance as far as how it's written, as far as the dog being off the property without being on the lead and stuff, none of that's changing.
Just the fee schedule.
Just the fee schedule's changing.
What is the amount at this time? I don't have it
on. $50.
This is for the neglect?
No. Put the neglect to the side.
All right.
Second page.
Yeah, second page.
Non-aggressive.
Yeah.
Versus aggressive.
Yeah, the fees that I'm talking about now is strictly to deal with restraint. It's just your dog being on a leash. If your dog's running off your property without being on a leash, right now it's a $50 ticket, period. If it's aggressive, if it's not aggressive, it's a $50 ticket. If it's one time, if it's two times, it's a $50 ticket. In order for that ticket to go up now, we would actually have to classified as a nuisance to get the ticket to go up. So this takes that out of the pocket, and we just the fee for it running at large goes up.
I got no problem with that.
But yeah, so I'm just asking for a fee change. I'm not asking for an order, no, nothing written change, just the money.
I guess at this point, then, has everybody understand where we're at and what we're doing?
Yeah, I think we changed gears somewhere, and I don't know where it happened. I'm sorry for that.
I did. I hit the clutch is what I did. I'm okay. Bad for that. I got a lot of exit ramps on my highway. Is everybody on page two on the left-hand side there about the fines, the difference between non-aggressive and aggressive? Does everybody understand what Corporal Griggs has explained to us? Everybody on board with that? Okay, so at this time I'll make a motion. I'll ask somebody on the committee to make a motion that we approve the fee schedule for the non-aggressive and aggressive dogs. Ask somebody to make a motion.
I make the motion that we approve the non-aggressive, aggressive fee changes that they're asking.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
Aye.
By golly.
Thank you.
So, okay, the majority has it, actually unanimous vote on that, so we will go ahead and approve that.
Thank you.
So what's next that you want to talk about?
On Section 3, they're under the bike quarantine, and this is something that Brad's proposing.
Mm-hmm.
It's highlighted also in yellow. It's at the bottom of the second page on the left side.
Mm-hmm.
This talks about the fees that right now, if your dog or cat or whatever is in the shelter for the bite quarantine and it needs medical attention, what this does is it says that the owner of the animal is responsible for the vet. I can read it word for word if you want, or I can just give you the synopsis. And I think Brad was looking for an approval on that tonight as well.
Yeah.
What's your thought, Patty?
We're correcting punctuation, okay, right now.
Well, Brad,
that's what
she
and I do.
Okay. Old habits.
I copied and pasted it. I just okay. Bring it up.
And who makes the determination?
I'm sorry?
Who makes the determination as to whether or not the animal requires medical attention?
Brad Rayfield makes the determination on animals of whether or not they require the medical okay. stuff. This is for stuff that his staff at the facility can't maintain. So if you have an animal comes in with diabetes or something like that and needs shots three times a day, or you know, things of that nature, You know, nobody's there 24 hours a day to maintain that. So this gives them the option to take care of that animal and still keep it in a quarantine environment, but it makes the owner of the animal responsible for that bill.
I got a question. I'm trying to see where that number four, the add-on, is different than number two, because it looks like the part that's only different is that the owner can take the dogs home and quarantine them in their house. Because it looks from like the fee cost is...
Are you talking about from part four?
Mm-hmm. Well, but in part two it says it's the owner's responsibility there too. Mm-hmm. So what are we saying?
I believe what you're looking at, Jack, is the difference between where it says quarantine at home or a veterinarian's office is the animals that can't be released. The animals that can be released to go home with the owner, and the animals that can't be released.
Yeah.
If they're there for evidence, if they're there for a cruelty case or a dangerous dog case,
well,
but they need medical treatment. Is that not correct?
I'll tell you what, let's do this. Let's table that for next time, because you're asking questions that Brad has the answers to.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Y'all good with that?
I think that's what he's talking about,
but
it could probably be worded better.
Yeah, let's wait for Brad. Let's table that till the next one. Let Brad.
Bites.
Yeah. It's for a bite quarantine, and when I spoke with him on it earlier, it was for if the animal had to come to the shelter for the quarantine period. You get two options for a bite quarantine. We have a home quarantine and a shelter quarantine, and we try to give options if we can, but under certain criteria, the animal has to go to the shelter. And I think what my understanding was is the at-home quarantine was not going to happen. It had to come to the shelter. This would give the ability to have the owner pay for that, for any medical stuff that they needed. Having said that, though, it's Brad's amendment to the ordinance. And since you're asking me questions I don't know the answer to, I just defer it to the next meeting, if you guys are good with that.
I think the confusion is the way it's worded. It just needs to be reworded there. And part of that, too, is going to be we'll have to get the health director in on this also. The health director sometimes has the last say on when a dog can be released back to the owner if it's under a bite quarantine.
So on the right-hand side where the dog's at, this is the dangerous dog, potentially dangerous dog ordinance as it is written. I'm not looking for a vote on this tonight. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff in there in yellow. But I wanted to put it in the file for you guys to read over it. I went online today on the county's website and pulled up Chapter 16. The one online does not read this way. This is the certified copy from the office. I don't think they've updated the ordinance online yet from the last approval from last year. So if you pull it up online, it's going to look a little different. Okay, but this right here is the copy. Okay. All right. So I don't know why. I did make a call today.
Is that a potential hazard for
It would bring, well, the certified copy is what we hold in court. So as long as we have what's the certified copy, we're good. If the general public was to go look, it would draw questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a phone call today about that, and they're going to be looking into that. Okay. So if I just didn't want you to look at this and then go look at the website and go, wait a minute, that's not reading right.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but they read the same, but the way they're worded in a different format.
Yeah, like the... some of them are showing up in different sections. So like the spay and neuter part where you have to do for your animal, and one is in one section in this paper, and on the other one it's under a different section. So they don't read alike.
But the content is the same.
The content is pretty much the same, but you would have to fish to find the same thing. So, and I just want to put that out there. So if you look at this and then pull up the internet to look at it, you're not going to have the same piece of paper in front of you.
Just
Now, I don't want you to think I did something weird.
You? No.
Yeah, I know. Who would do that, right? But the first segment is highlighted under down toward the bottom under number one, but you'll have to flip it to page two. And a lot of
question about that.
Yes,
just
sir.
Having been through that whole thing before, mm-hmm. when the grants, mm-hmm. you know, when Reggie bit Sophie and mm-hmm. you deemed that dog dangerous.
Yes, sir.
Did you direct them to chapter 16:10?
We did.
Oh, all right. So what I'm saying is while the language is different, I think if you all get another dog that's deemed dangerous by the sheriff's department, mm-hmm. that you give them.
What we hand them is what we would have in a certified version. Our packets are made off of this.
All right, so they're not going to go look at it on the internet.
They can. If they go look at it, it's going to read different. But what they have is what's certified by the county. So, yeah. And we've always done that. And I don't even know why I looked at it, really. I just pulled it up today. It was just like verifying things to make sure everything's still laid out right. And it was like, oh, that's off. So I did make a phone call today about it, and they're going to look into it. So, but
yeah, good.
I just didn't want somebody to read this and then read that and be like, oh, my gosh.
In reality, it is the same. It's just the way it's worded is different in different places.
Yeah, it's in different places. The sections are different.
Yes, and you read that, you'd be going away.
So on page two, if you look over toward the right hand of the first sentence, you'll see where five is marked out, and I put three business days. That's to be in accordance with state law.
Okay.
So I'm just asking us to move it to what the state law says. At number three, we do this anyway, but it says in state law within 10 business days, so I just added that in there within 10 business days. Mm-hmm. Down on C. Now we're getting into a little bit of changes. We're getting into the confinement restrictions. It's talking about the animal must be muzzled. We would like to add, and it may not be worded exactly like this. The attorney will have to do the final wording for these things. But we want something in there that is muzzled to prevent the ability of biting, to imply a certain style of muzzle to be used on the animals. And that's because we had a case come up. Now we're involved with, so I can't talk about it. It's open case that's relating to a muzzle issues. Mm. And they're in violation of what the definition of a muzzle is, but we would like to reinforce what we're talking about for future reference. So we'd like to have something in there to specify what we're looking for a muzzle. On D, we talked about this last time. A dangerous dog should not be permitted in any recreational areas, dog parks, parks, or greenways. We're looking at adding in nor any places of business. Exceptions would be veterinarian offices and boarding kennels. Lowe's will let you bring your dog in Lowe's, and so will a lot of other places. What we're finding is people taking their dangerous dogs into Lowe's and other places of business, and we would like to say you can't do that. Mm-hmm.
Should the word public place of business be added in there? Because, like, you know, when I used to have a business down on 7th Avenue,
yeah.
Of course, if I was in that situation, I wouldn't bring them when we were having an auction or anything, but if I'm in there by myself, mm-hmm. you know, it's not, generally speaking, it's not open to the public.
We had a case come up where a dangerous dog was trying to get transferred into our county, and the guy owns an automotive shop in our county, and his plan was to bring the dog into his automotive shop.
Okay.
In which case, as long as it was in that secured building, it wouldn't have to be muzzled. But the dog was a vicious dog out of Buncombe County that was coming to our county. Now, since then, they've decided not to do it. They didn't like our other restrictions. But we feel like we need to try to do something to make sure that you know, on your private business, if it's not closed, I don't know if it would be a business at that time. You know, that can be questionable.
I think that would probably be more of a legal from the county attorney to specify
Yeah, he'll come in. This gives him an idea of what we're looking at, and he'll come in and write all the terminology.
I agree.
That might be something good to include in that, too, and to ask him, once the business is closed, it's not open to the public anymore, so yeah. It would be more like a residential.
Yeah.
I mean, what if you had a salvage yard, and you got some junkyard dogs out there just taking care of?
Well, if they're outside and deemed dangerous, then you're in violation anyway. Cause
but they're in, a, they're in an enclosure.
If they're in an enclosure, then you're not in violation.
Oh. Young lady has something
to all say, right. You?
Public comment?
You should write it the way the anti-smoking or the non-smoking ordinance is. It's like, I think it says any place of business open to the public. It's pretty specific about that. So it's like if it's your private office, when it's not open to the public, then it's private property, and you can smoke in there, mm-hmm. but you can't while it's open to the public. So the way that's worded seems to me would be probably the best way to word it.
And that's exactly where I was headed with that, too. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. Thank you.
And it's already written. Just steal it.
Yeah. Copy-paste.
Reallocated.
Huh?
Reallocated.
We like having
So, but I'm good with that. I mean, really. But that's kind of what we're looking for, is to keep these things out of places where just the general public's going to be at, not realize they're, you know, looking at paint beside a dangerous dog. So, and obviously the exceptions with that would be if the dog had to go to the veterinarian's office or somebody was leaving town and boarding their dog. And down below is number two. We would like to change the size of the dangerous dog sign. As it reads now, it has to be at least 120 square inches, which could be about anything. But we'd like to move it to an 8.5 by 11 dangerous dog size. That is the size of a sheet of paper. Mm-hmm. And if you now, if you would turn to the last two pages. That, wait a minute. Well, yeah, let's go to the last two, and then we'll come back one. That's the dangerous dog sign that we'd like to propose to have implemented in the county.
The very last page.
The very last page, mm-hmm. Yes. The other page was your showing different animals that could be placed in there if need
like
be.
Like a hyena to me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it kind of does. Or a, what is
but the very last page is what we're looking at as implementing that as the dangerous dog sign. And what would require is that anybody who has a dangerous dog in Henderson County, this is the sign that would be posted on their house.
Perfect.
Does a couple of things for us. A deputy sheriff who goes to that house for a call, whether it be an alarm activation or a fight, if they see that sign, they know that that's a dangerous dog living there. It's easy. It's depictable. Yeah. And then if when our deputy goes around and does the inspections, there's no real sign that they have to have. So he has to make a determination on each sign, does that work or not? So this would take that out of the equation as well. So it's, oh, yeah, they got our sign. It's good to go. So we'd like to have that as the last dog sign.
So are these going to be supplied by the department?
Yes and no. We would give them a copy, a color copy, on their dangerous dog packet. They can either make other colored copies and laminate them and hang them up, which is what a lot of people do now with the other signs that they have, or we can actually get these things made on a it's like a plastic sign that would cost them $20 a sign. So they would have option A or option B. It'd be up to them. If they wanted to purchase one, we would have some at the sheriff's office, and they'd purchase them at cost. But for people who can't afford that and just want to do the
color copy,
you know, we'll give them the first one. They go to Staples and get four or five more, however many they need, and have them laminated and hang them up in the proper locations.
What are the proper locations?
It has to be any entry into wherever the dog's being kept. So if it's being kept into the house, by the front door, back door, side door, garage door, windows, it had to be basically on each side of your house to cover the ordinance. If you keep it in a kennel, a secured kennel with a concrete floor and the roof and everything, it has to be on each side of the kennel. So on average, you're looking at four signs, unless you have one of those houses that have, like, dips and stuff in it.
My Spanish is limited, but Perro Bravo means dog will bite?
I'm going to say yes, because the person who did that is Spanish, yeah.
Okay. And it's legal for you to say that you've got to post that on your house?
Absolutely. It's in the ordinance now. You have to have it posted.
That's already in the ordinance. So it is in the ordinance. The only thing that we're changing, the way the ordinance read, it said 120 square inches. Mm-hmm. Well, you can get 120 square inches like this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this is more feasible. It's more feasible. It's easier on people to take a page size.
I will tell you right now that every sign that we have in Henderson County, only one house has the actual sign. Everybody else has a paper sheet sign. Yeah. And it's just because of the odd size.
Does it have to be this one, or does it have to just be a
We're asking beware? That it be, no, it can't be a beware of a dog sign. It has to say dangerous dog according to the ordinance now. So we're asking that this sign be posted.
And it's just really your little dog?
No, that's not my dog.
Good. Nasty little thing.
That's really not my dog. Uh-uh.
Is he nasty?
That's my dog when she's hungry and I hadn't had fed her yet. But.
You guys scare me so bad. I wish I didn't have a dog who's but, sweet.
And a lot of dogs are, but the ones that we've deemed dangerous, they've obviously had some type of incidences. So, but people need to be able to know it before they get there. The mailman, UPS.
I have to introduce you to Maddie, and then you can just be her guardian.
There you go. But we're asking this sign right here to be introduced.
All right.
The last one, not the first one. I did put that on there for a reason, though, because you can actually put a dog's picture on these things if they purchase a sign. We really don't want to get into that because, you know, it doesn't work well. So just the silhouette of it would work best for us. Now, if you flip back two pages to number H, right now, if your dog that is deemed dangerous and you violate the dangerous dog law, we have to take you to jail. There's no option. You're going to go to jail. Three things are going to happen. We're going to seize your dog. We're going to write you a $500 ticket, and you're going to jail. We'd like to change that up just a little bit. We'd like to change. It says may impound the dog. We always impound a dog on a violation of a dangerous dog because it just needs to happen. So we'd like to change may to shall. And then over a little bit to the right, you'll see where it says warrant scratched out. And this is the terminology our attorney told us to put in for this one, is summons into criminal court. There's three ways to get you into criminal court. One is for me to arrest you and take you to jail. One is for me to get a criminal summons on you. And the other one is for me to write you like a speeding ticket style summons.
North Carolina General Statute.
Yeah. So sometimes you don't have to take people to jail. Other times you do. You need to take them to jail. But our deputies should have the availability to decide what's most appropriate for each individual case. And we've had in the past to arrest people because of these violations and take them to jail. It's the only criminal violation they've ever had, never seen the inside of a jail before. And really, it wasn't necessary or shouldn't be necessary to get the overall thing taken care of, incident took care of. Obviously, we just want to get them in court so they can answer their charges and finish with it. But everybody doesn't have to go to jail to do that. Some do, some don't. But everything else that's a misdemeanor in law, our guys have the option on the streets to take you to jail, write you a ticket, or get a summons on you. And we just want the same right here. And that's it. That was a lot of stuff to take in. So I'm not definitely looking for a vote on any of this tonight, but please take it home and review it. If you have any questions, everybody knows how to get a hold of me.
What if you leave town and Mike's in charge?
Who?
Marsteller?
Yeah. Oh, he's no longer in charge of us.
Oh, he's not?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
Paul's the boss.
Okay. Well, he was. I thought he was the boss before.
Yeah, he's the boss. Okay. Paul's the boss.
What happened to him?
He got transferred to a different position. He works over in the courthouse now.
Oh.
He's getting ready to slide on out into retirement. So.
He was actually
too young.
He was actually a sergeant when we first started, and then you remember. And then he got promoted to lieutenant not too long afterwards.
Yeah. So he's got about another year to go, and then he's going to retire, yeah. So.
Do you have anything else?
No, that's all I had to present.
Yes.
Do y'all have any questions? Anybody have any questions for Corporal Griggs on what he's presented tonight?
Well, I think you should be promoted.
I do, too.
Wow.
He's going to be.
Should we vote it?
He is going to be. Oh,
do you want to be too?
No. I'm going to be promoted to retirement.
I can see that coming.
I think
easy.
We get to approve who's
okay.
going to replace you.
All right, well, let me ask someone to make a motion to go out of public hearing.
I'll make a motion that we leave public hearing.
Second.
Second.
We are now out of public hearing. Thank you, everyone, for coming tonight.
Thank you.